I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anilio, and you're listening to episode number 162 of the Functional Nerds Podcast. And John, I just wanted to say, I clearly told you I wanted bottled water, chilled over ice, but not touching the ice so the bottles don't get covered in condensation. I'm a Hugo winner now, and you're going to have to do better at making me feel like a rock star.
I shall do my best. That is Hugo award-winning. We'll just say Hugo award winner, Patrick Hester. We'll leave it vague.
Have you heard my joke? So this is the way I do it. I am the Hugo-nominated podcast producer / Hugo award-winning fanzine editor of the Campbell award-winning Merlafferty's I should be writing.
Wow, that's good. That mentions it all. There you go. Very good. That is Patrick Hester. He is an author, a blogger, and a podcast dude. You can check out his website, atfmb.com. You can follow him on Twitter, at atfmb. You can also check out his other Hugo and Campbell award-winning ventures out there for SF Signal and the I Should Be Writing podcast, and as well as his own writing. So go and check all that out. I am John Anilio. I am a songwriter and a composer. You can check out my music over at johnanilio.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at johnanilio. And today we are joined by Eric Beist. Eric is a documentary filmmaker living in Oregon. Eric is an avid home brewer, dog walker, and flannel wearer. His current project is a series of short films called Hop Stories that tell the stories of Oregon breweries, displaying the craftsmanship and uniqueness in every beer brewed. Eric, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Now, Eric is on the show today because he makes really good documentaries, documentary films, and specifically the Hop Stories we're talking about. And I am involved in those because I've done music for a couple of the episodes. Eric's partner on the making of these films is Adam Gaylord. And Adam, well, I guess Adam just was on, like, I guess he downloaded some of my music. I hate to call him a fan, but I don't know if he just knew about my music and liked it. And Adam had contacted me a couple times just saying that he liked my music. And one time, actually, he sent me some lyrics to a zombie song that he was, see if I can, like, write some music to, which I did. And as Patrick could tell you, people send me lyrics, and then I write music for them, and then I don't do anything with it.
Actually, what Patrick would tell people is that John has actually solicited lyrics from people who have sent him, you know, worked on it for quite a while, and then sent him the lyrics, and then he never wrote any music for it and never did anything with it.
Oh, no. See, I write music for them and play them for myself, and then I never actually record it and put it out into the world. So I do write the music. I just never let anybody hear it. So that's where I'm great.
There was a potentially, what's the big award in the music industry?
The Grammy.
Yeah, there was a potential Grammy award-winning song about Babylon 5 that John never recorded. So that's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
What a waste of talent, man.
I know. I really dropped the ball on that one. But anyway, so Adam did that. And then, you know, so we sort of kept in touch because I email the folks on my list pretty regularly. And Adam had emailed me one time and said, hey, I'm doing this documentary series with this guy, Eric. And, you know, can we use one of your instrumentals for the background music in it? And usually I would just would say, yeah, sure, go right ahead. But I went and I looked at the episode that was already up. And I was really impressed with how good it was. It was really skillfully done documentaries, and I was like, well, I'll do you one better. How about I compose, you know, score your next one? And Eric and Adam were gracious enough to accept my offer, and I've scored a couple of those episodes, and it's really been a learning thing for me because it was something I was looking to get into and to actually score right to picture, and it's been a really fun collaborative process there. And now what Eric is doing is, because he's made, how many episodes are there now of Hop Stories?
We just released our sixth episode yesterday.
Okay, so there are six episodes of Hop Stories out there, and, you know, like so many creative folks that we know, writers, musicians, and otherwise, this is a passion project for Eric, and he involves other people like me and other people to do all the other jobs that go into making a film, which is a lot. And, well, you know, he'd like to pay some people for that, so he's running a Kickstarter for that. So Eric, why don't you tell people a little bit about the Kickstarter that you guys have going on right now?
So we're getting into our last week of the Kickstarter project. you know, we have some decent rewards, such as like t-shirts and pint glasses. And if you're out in Oregon, there's better rewards. You can get like a brew day with one of the breweries that we featured, or brewery tours, or that sort of thing. So it's, we're getting to crunch time. We need a little help still.
Yeah, well, that's the way it kind of goes with these Kickstarters. It seems like some of them get funded like in the first hour, or you know, they get funded at the very end. So hopefully some of our listeners will help you out. You know, this is a whole world where the like sort of the craft brewing thing, it's really taken off. And you know, and I know anytime I've posted links to you guys' recent episodes,
yeah,
I always get a lot of people right back because, like, you know, the comments on it, because there just seems to be a community surrounding that is just super passionate about it and seems very supportive of the other people that are involved. Because there's, you focus on the breweries, but then there's a lot of people that do it out of their garage or something too. And it seems like there's usually a link. Maybe they started that way and then they sort of work their way up to actually running a full-time brewery. So how did you get involved in that? Like, where along the line did you get interested in that? Because obviously, it's a passion for you to do that as well.
Yeah. So I brewed my first batch of beer 3 years ago. One of my friends said, "Hey, I'm brewing beer. You should come over and check it out." And I was like, "Oh, that's sweet." And we had a good time. I split the batch with him, and it was pretty awesome. It was a IPA of some sort. And then my father-in-law actually had been a home brewer in the late 80s, early 90s, and had stopped brewing, but he had all his equipment still. So he just kind of gave it to me and said, "Go nuts." And we've been brewing, I think, 32 batches of beer so far in the past 3 years, and it's been fun. So from that, I kind of became interested in beer, and yeah.
Now admit it. Your first batch, it was sludge. It was crap.
No, it was good. It was good. We've brewed that beer a few times since then, and it does get better every time.
a friend of mine who actually contributes for Functional Nerds is JT Evans, and he brews beer. And he recently was scrambling for bottles because his bottles weren't clean. Have you ever run into that problem?
Yeah, we've had some pretty nasty stuff end up in the bottom of the bottles, and if you don't wash them out right, they're
and I guess the story went that he had thought that everything was clean and ready to go, and he was wrong.
Yeah, I could see that happening.
Common.
Well, yeah, I mean, every batch of beer we do, we have, you know, a different little issue that we run into. We've just moved to kegging now, so we have a two-tap kegerator at our house.
Wow.
Which is pretty awesome. We go through beer a lot faster. But
so we know where everybody is on Sunday.
Right, yep.
Now, I have to ask a question about the kegerator. Is the kegerator just the keg to hold it, or does it do something specific?
So it's a mini fridge with two kegs and a CO2 tank in there, and then there's two taps coming off the top, so we can, you know, put beer in the keg and pour it off in a couple of days after it carbonates.
Okay, so yeah, because I believe my wife has a coworker that does not brew beer but has a kegerator in his house anyway, because I think he's an alcoholic, and you know, because so it's just like, it's just him by himself. He just like lives in this apartment and like, you know, taps the kegerator.
Yeah.
and enjoys himself a beer or 23 on a Sunday while watching football. So there you go.
23 beers on a Sunday is light for my brother. So I don't even want to hear it.
I am amazed that, you know, and not because I think the craft beer folks are, and I know there are some, you know, people that I like, Will Wheaton, I know, is pretty into his craft beer, and he talks a lot about that. And I know a friend of the show, Kyle Stevens, who is the singer for Kirby Crackle, which is this great nerd rock band out in Seattle. He does his own home brewing too, and it's because you like the process of making it, and you like drinking it for the taste of it, not necessarily to get hammered. Although I'm sure, you know, that's a nice benefit of it too, but it's not just 24 beers on a Sunday because, you know, that's what you do. It's more
And here's what you've discovered, John, and this is something that I don't think any of our listeners have been aware of at all, but there is a connection between the author community and alcohol.
What? This is the first I'm hearing of this.
I know. It's shocking. It's shocking.
Yeah, no. So it's really cool, and I really enjoyed watching Eric's documentaries that he's made so far on this, and I hope the Kickstarter gets funded, and I hope you just keep doing more work because I think you're doing a great job so far. So
now, here's the other side effect of all this home brewing and microbrews and all that kind of stuff. Go to San Antonio. I'm at Worldcon. We go out to a local restaurant, and the people who are into beer are like, well, what kind of microbrews do you have? And we're at a Mexican restaurant. It is a very traditional Mexican restaurant, and they're like, well, we have Budweiser and Coors and
Corona. Probably, yeah. Corona if they're a Mexican
place. I mean, they had like nothing. I was kind of amused by that, because here in Colorado, anywhere you go, they're like, you know, they're like, it's like, what kind of beer do you have? Oh, well, we have, you know, such and such pale and this and that and blah, blah, blah. And they just start listing off all these really strange names that come from all these little microbrews. Mm-hmm. Completely different culture.
Well, yeah, one of the pieces that I composed for one of the episodes of Hop Story, I ended up calling it Hoptimus Prime, and it wasn't because I was so clever with it. It was just because there actually is a beer called Hoptimus Prime. There is a brewery in it, and it's a very like hoppy looking robot, you know, on the cover. So there's just like a lot of different a lot of different stuff out
there. Now, it's interesting that the whole connection between hops and beer and brewing, and no one ever puts fuzzy little bunny rabbits on their beer bottles. I don't understand.
It seems like a lost opportunity.
Especially like Easter.
Yeah. I'm sure someone has it. Yeah, you'll see. Although it's going to be like angry bunny, you know, it won't be the little cute fuzzy one.
And the problem with bunnies is, you know, what's with all the carrots? What do they need such good eyesight for anyway?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
It always comes back to Buffy.
Yes. All right. Well, let's get into our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And Patrick, why don't you go first with your pick this week?
My pick? Okay, so my pick is actually going to be very simple. The Hugo Awards / Worldcon. There's been a lot of stuff. There's a lot of negative stuff out there about Worldcon and everything kind of swirling around the Hugo Awards. And there is definitely change that needs to happen. However, let's not forget the fact that Worldcon is the kind of place where you can go and you can actually talk to people who understand what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. I ran into Karen Burnham and, you know, one of the things that Karen says is, oh, good, someone interesting to talk to. And she says that throughout Worldcon, because Worldcon is where folks who have our kinds of interests, science fiction, fantasy, genre kind of stuff, they can go there and I feel like it's a very inclusive environment. Obviously, other people don't. They're feeling that there needs to be more diversity and stuff. But there is a lot of inclusiveness at Worldcon. And I love it. It's a great time for me. And it's a time when, you know, I've told John before, my family, they don't get me. They don't get what I like. You know, science fiction, they say that's space shit. That's nothing. You know, I remember trying to get someone to watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer. They're like, oh, no, that's high school stuff. You know, that's all about high school. I don't like that. So Worldcon, very, very fun for me. I get to meet all my friends. All my friends are famous. I get to hang out with them. They get me sick as a dog. And I get con cred. And then, of course, the Hugo Awards, I think, are a lot of fun. And so that's my pick this week.
Very cool. Yeah, well, my experience with any of the cons that I've gone to is you end up losing your voice because...
Yes.
Because you meet all these people that you have relationships with online, and even new people that you meet, like you said, they're your people. You have the same interests. They're all smart. They're all doing interesting work. You sit down anywhere, whether it's in the bar or in the hotel lobby or wherever, and you're going to be able to talk and have a great conversation for as long as, you know, they don't have to run to another panel or something. So you just you're talking the whole time. You really do. And, and it's great, but you do lose your voice. So, so cool. I'm glad to see that you had a good time there. And obviously you won the Hugo for best signal. And you guys are now taking yourself out of that category now, right?
We have recused ourselves from the fanzine category so that someone else can be up on that stage and have that same experience and be tackle hugged by Chris Garcia.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I think that's a really classy move. I don't know if I would make that move. I'd want to win every year that I possibly could.
Well, did you happen to see the Ustream?
I did not see the Ustream.
Okay. No. So, I believe it's Pat Cadigan won a Hugo and it was after she won one of the professional Hugos and it's after, you know, Squeakcast had recused themselves, which means that I might actually have a chance now for podcast. And then we recused ourselves from fanzine. She gets up there, she's winning. She's like, wow, all these people, you know, they're so, I forget the word she put, noble or something, you know, because they're recusing themselves from winning a Hugo. And I just want you guys to know that I'm not going to do that. I want to be up here as many times as possible, you know, keep sending them my way. I want to be up here. It was hilarious. Everybody was just cracking up. It was great.
Cool. Very good. Eric, what is your pick this week?
Breaking Bad.
Ooh, okay.
This show, I sat down to watch the first episode, you know, probably a year ago, and I had to just compulsively watch every episode until I had caught up. And now that I'm caught up and we're in the final season, it's just this awful, guilty pleasure. I watch it and get more depressed and then I want to watch more.
I tried to watch it when it first came out, and I was having Malcolm in the Middle flashbacks. And so I couldn't watch it. I'm almost to the point now where I think I could sit down and watch it, but I still have not watched it.
Yeah, Bryan Cranston is just absolutely brilliant in the entire series.
And yeah, I've heard.
It's fascinating to watch him and say, you know, every decision he's making is a bad decision, but you can't blame him for making the decisions. Mm-hmm. Like he has to choose to go deeper and deeper into this hole. So it's just fascinating, I think.
It's sort of the next thing for me. My wife and I are about 3/4 of the way through Mad Men, and that's what we've been watching for the past several months. We watch maybe like 3 or 4 episodes a week or something like that. That's what it ends up being. We just go through Netflix, and Breaking Bad's probably next. Although, you know, my wife's like, I think that's too dark for me. I don't know if I can handle that. And I'm like, I don't know. Everyone loves it though. I know it's dark, but I think everybody loves it, and that's what you got to do. And Cranston is just, you know, obviously people know him from Malcolm in the Middle first, and he's a really funny guy. I've heard him a bunch of times on Adam Carolla's podcast, and he is always really funny on that. Like, he's got like a lot of range, and he's a really good guy. And Adam Carolla did like a Kickstarter for a movie that he's going to make, and Cranston did like the video with him where and it's really funny because it's just like this whole misunderstanding where Carolla thinks that he's, you know, agreed to be in the movie, and there's like a moment where Cranston's like, Oh no, I'm not going to, I can't be in your movie. Like, did you see Argo? That one best picture of all the pictures. I can't be in your little movie.
now, Eric, the Cranston character in the very beginning, what was his profession before he started Breaking Bad?
He's a chemistry teacher.
A teacher. Gosh, John, this could be like a future career path for you. You could use this as a template for the future.
I will have to like take my notes on how to make meth and start a new movie from there. But very good. Okay, so Eric's pick is Breaking Bad. I'll do a quick one. My pick this week is Keynote for the iPad. As Patrick just alluded to, I am a teacher, and I've been using the iPad for the past couple of months. And I thought, you know, I let me try Keynote out. It was $10. Although now I think if you just buy a new device, whether it's an iPhone or an iPad, the new ones that already have iOS 7 installed, I think you get all the Apple suite of apps for
free.
They
used to do that. They used to do that. When you would buy any Apple computer, you got iWork and iLife as part of it. And they got away from that. I think all you got was iLife.
Yeah, you got iLife for a long time. I never remember iWork being included. I guess it might have been at one point, but now they're just including them all. So you get Keynote and you get Pages. And I bought Pages too. I use that sometimes on the iPad. And so I've been using Keynote to do lesson plans, more for myself than anything else. It keeps me focused. And so I have my iPad. hooked up. We have like these projectors in the room, you know, where it's, so I had to get the iPad to VGA converter to go into the projector, and it's been working great. It's you know, just to kind of have like the, it's really easy to use. I didn't really do too much prep work. I just started, and you just put your little pictures in and your text and whatever else, and you just keep tapping it, and you can, it's really easy to put the little animations from one thing to the next. And so that's how I've been doing my lesson plan so far this year, and I really enjoy it. I think it helps keeps the kids focused, because let's face it, most people, and kids especially, are visual learners. They like to have something to look at up on the screen. And it really, even just those like kind of silly animations, I think it's just like, oh, hey, what was that? It flew across the screen. I'll pay attention now. Shiny. You know, so I think that really helps. So I've been doing all sorts of stuff, and I have just the ability, like on an iOS device, to just take a picture of your screen. So I have programs like music notation apps. So I'll do like a little measure of music, and then I'll make it full screen, take a picture of it, and then incorporate that into the keynote. And it's great. It's been working out really well for me. So whatever, you know, if you're a teacher or any kind of presentation, keynote's great. I know it's sort of just the Mac version of PowerPoint, but I have to say it's really easy to use, really easy to figure out. So if you have an iPad or a Mac, check out Keynote. So that is my pick this week.
Shift-Command-5 and Shift-Command-4 and Shift-Command-3 on your Apple computer. This gives you all your screen capture stuff. You can capture the entire screen, you can capture a specific window, or you can get a marquee and capture just what you want.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do that quite a bit.
And then, of course, on your iPhone, you have to push the home button and the top button at the same time, and it'll capture your screen.
Yep. And I've just been using that tons and tons. So there you go. That's my
If you're on a PC, get Snagit.
All right, so our main topic this week is, not surprisingly, documentary films. I watch a ton of documentaries. I just, since the advent of Netflix and they have so many great docs, I just find myself getting into docs. And I imagine we're sort of entering a golden age of documentaries just in the sheer amount and quality of them. For two reasons, probably. Number one, because of the availability. It used to be you'd have to go to a movie theater, and there weren't a lot of docs in movie theaters. You know, you have to go to a film festival or something. So there's just so many more outlets and avenues between Netflix and all the different streaming sites and just YouTube and Vimeo and all the different outlets that you could watch a doc on. So that's one part of it. And I think the other part of it is the sort of the thing we talk about a lot on this show, which is the sort of democratization of the tools to create. You know, years ago, to get a camera was just financially impossible for most young filmmakers to just go and buy a camera. Now you can get a really good camera for a reasonable amount of money, an affordable amount of money, and then, you know, you have your all the different software that you use to edit, and then putting it out there distribution-wise. So you are seeing all of these great docs come out. And like I said, Eric makes great ones, so I wanted to talk a little bit about sort of how he got into making them and the process and, you know, how people view them. So, Eric, how did you get into the filmmaking that you do?
So I went to college and got a degree in it, I guess. That's there it is. But I started out in music production. I was in a band in high school, and from that I found the visual side of things as well. So I just kind of started doing that and didn't look back. Cinematography is one of my favorite things. And then I'm also love editing. Sitting at a computer and kind of assembling a story is
You is love editing?
Fun. Yeah, it's weird. Ugh. No one understands that, but
editing is the hardest part of the story's made. Yeah, editing is the hardest part of audio podcasting, trust me. People don't believe me. I tell them, you know, if you do an hour of audio recording, you're going to do at least 2 hours of editing.
Yep.
Well, that's the thing. And I think people who have listened to our show a long time know this, but maybe for people who don't, I got into podcasting because I felt like, ooh, like I know how to do all the audio editing. And I, you know, because of the music side of things. And the great irony is I don't do the audio editing for this show. Patrick does. And because when I did my own podcast before Patrick and I started doing Functional Nerds, I had a different one that I did by myself for a long time. It was this is hard. It takes a long time. I don't like doing it. And Patrick was willing to do it. And it's, you know, like anything, you can, I think Patrick has gotten the editing down to a science where he can do it for sort of the most the shortest time possible, and it makes the most efficient use of his time with it, because as he sort of alluded to earlier, he does one of our shows a week. He does two. You guys still doing two SF Signals a week?
Yep.
The two SF Signals, and then usually, and I should be writing a week or every few weeks or so.
Or two.
So he often has up to five podcasts that he edits every week.
Wow.
So it's a lot of editing and putting it out there. And so if you like doing it, that's a great thing. Now, so for you, so why don't we talk a little bit about some of the tools that you use? So first of all, you know, the Hop Story stuff looks great. So what kind of camera are you using?
So we're using Canon DSLR cameras. So I have a 7D, and then one of my other shooters has the 5D Mark III.
Cool. Now, just if I may ask, and if you don't want to divulge this, that's fine, but what does a camera of that quality cost nowadays?
So my camera was $1,800 brand new, mm-hmm. and it's about 2 years old.
Okay. So that's sort of $2,000 is sort of the price point for a you know, pretty decent high quality camera, which I'm sure some people are going $2,000, but two for what you're doing, $2,000 is a nothing investment if this is what you want to do.
Right.
I mean, it's not nothing. I mean, you have to you have to decide, like, yes, this is what I'm going to do, and I'm going to spend $2,000 on it. But you can get a credit card, and you can put $2,000 on it quite easily. Whereas in the past, I don't even know what a camera was, like a high quality. I mean, you know, obviously, when they were doing film, I mean, God knows how much that stuff cost.
Well, John, think about it. Why do you think that they don't actually buy the cameras? They rent them for movies.
For movies, yeah.
That's why there's always that Panasonic blah, 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 blah in the credits.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, are we talking like $100,000 a camera?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy. It's not crazy. That's just the way that it always was. But what does the Red camera cost? I know that's sort of the big one that a lot of filmmakers use.
So for just the camera, it's about $18,000.
Okay.
And then you need lenses and media to record on and all sorts of stuff to make it work.
And what are you editing in now? Are you doing Final Cut?
I'm in Premiere CS6.
Okay, so you're using Adobe.
Yep.
Was there a reason that you decided to use Adobe over like Final Cut?
When Final Cut X came out, I really was not excited about it. I mean, it's cheap and you can use it pretty easily right out of the box. But I grew up using Avid and Final Cut, so I wanted something that was a little more robust and a little more familiar. So I hopped into that.
I have a copy of the last Final Cut before they nerfed it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the one that came in the big box. I have that in my closet, and I'd totally be willing to sell that to you for $100,000.
I have my own copy. It's all right.
Now, you're saying you're using the Adobe? Do you have the entire suite so that like things can talk to each other and go back and forth and?
Yeah, and that's one of the best things about it, is their dynamic link system. So if I want to send something to After Effects and, you know, animate a clip or something like that, I can quickly do that and not have all the render time and all the kind of wasted time going back and forth between programs.
So obviously you're using Apple. What kind of machine are you running?
I have a 27-inch iMac, the
nice.
i7.
Nice.
Cool. I was talking a lot of this Apple stuff, and I was in the Apple store the other day to get this camera connection kit that I'm using with my microphone right now. And I was talking to a guy who works in the Apple store, but is also teaches in the district that I teach in. And we were talking all about the different machines, and we were just talking about, you know, I have my eye on Logic 10, which just came out a couple of months ago. And I was all excited. And then I realized, and I knew it was going to happen, oh, my computer won't run that. I have a 5-year-old MacBook, and it won't work on it. So I'm
poor John.
Well, it's okay. It's, you know, I think if you get 5 years out of a laptop, that's pretty damn good these days. And I know what's interesting about Apple, and that's what I love about Apple. Not to Apple fanboy too much, but it's. I like that they're not backwards compatible. I like that they just kind of keep going forward. And it's like, you know what, get a new machine every 4 or 5 years, you know, because we're going to just keep making the software to run it peak stuff, and we're not going to let it get bogged down. And I remember even thinking like a year ago, boy, you know, I don't have any problems with my laptop. Like, I'm not hurting for anything. It runs everything the way I want it to run. And then really almost overnight, it's like, well, can't run this now. Can't upgrade that because of this. And it's like, all right, well, that's what happens. And now you're going to have to, and it doesn't matter. Now my son will use my laptop and I'll get a new one at some point soon. So, but all right, well, we are unfortunately running short on time. So, you know, before we split, we do want to have Eric again. Eric Weiss, you know, he's running the Kickstarter for Hop Stories. So again, tell people where they can go online to check out the Kickstarter and to check out Hop Stories in general.
So you can head over to
your social media.
Yeah, and all your social media stuff.
Yeah, so you can head over to hopstories.com, and that has a link to our Kickstarter right on the homepage, and you can watch all the videos, our past episodes. And you can find us on Twitter/hopstories or Facebook, and facebook.com/hopstories. So we got everything going on.
Cool. And, you know, I will say, too, that Hop Stories are right on the videos are right on the site. And are you embedding the Vimeo links onto your site? Is that what you're doing there?
Yeah. We just grab the video from Vimeo and plug it right in and makes Vimeo, it nice and easy.
Vimeo, for people who don't know, is essentially just like HD YouTube. It's just a much higher quality video. So just check out the videos there, and you know, you'll end up checking out other videos on Vimeo too, because it's a really cool site with all that stuff. So very good. So is it just hopstories.com? Is that what you're saying?
Hopstories.com.
Very good. Okay, Patrick.
And Eric, where are you hosting your video files? Because those got to be huge. Are you hosting them at Vimeo?
Yep. So our video files are about 130 megs. So
right.
we can press them down pretty well, but still good.
Vimeo has like a pro account. Is that how that works? So you can upload something like that. It's like a little monthly fee.
Yeah. Yep.
Cool. Very good. Okay. Patrick, what do you have going on this week?
I've got tons of things going on over at Kirkus. I just did there's a graphic novel version of A Wrinkle in Time, which is a classic book that a lot of people love, and they've done a graphic novel. I just did Saga. And what's cool about that is Image Comics actually tweeted it. And tagged me, so potentially 66,000 people saw my Twitter handle, which is pretty freaking cool. Obviously, the Hugos was great. There's a free chapter on my website for people to go read from my space opera, so I'm encouraging folks to go see that and read it. And as I've mentioned previously, I want to keep letting people know I will be at Mile High Con October 18th, 19th, and 20th. Mile High Con is a Denver, it's kind of the Colorado con that everybody goes to. Shawty McGuire is going to be there. Cat Valenti is going to be there. It's a decent sized con, lots of fun, and supposedly I'm on the programming, even though I haven't been sent a program schedule yet. So watch for that. And I continue to do the guest Wednesday doodles on my blog. Just had one from Maurice Broaddus and his writing partner, who have a story in Glitter and Mayhem. So go check all that stuff out. ATFMB, SF Signal for the podcast, Kirkus for the book reviews.
Very good. And you could just check out my music. It's over at johnanilio.com, including the couple of instrumentals that appear in the Hop Stories videos. I believe they are Optimus Prime and Across the Water are the two that appear in the videos as well. And they're two little instrumentals that are on the Flying Robots EP that I have there. So you can check that out, as well as my other music, johnanilio.com. And you can follow me on Twitter at johnanilio. Thank you, everyone, for joining us this week. And we will see you next
time. Autobots, transform and pour a beer.
All right, everybody. We'll see you next time.
say thank you on behalf of the Goobernal Sills, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.